Good morning. So today we're going to continue talking about pointers, which we started last time. Last time we also went over how classes work in C++, just emphasizing things that were different than Java, that we need to have the declaration of classes, listing all the functions, but not actually having the implementation of the functions in a .h file. We use this double colon syntax when we actually define the implementation to separate the class name from the method name. We have this weird extra semicolon at the end. We mentioned about const to mark methods that work on an object that won't be changed by the method, and static, which is almost like in Java. And we talked about how objects work, and the big difference that unlike in Java, objects are values in C++, not references. So they act more like primitive types in Java when you do an assignment. It doesn't make two things that point to the same object that actually copies the values. And when you return one, that actually constructs a new object and copies that to its call. And we also talked about the preprocessor, which is what this pound include thing was. And we talked about how that was really a text substitution thing. It just really actually generated a copy of the file's text for the next phase of the compiler. Start pointing. So any questions about any of the things before pointers, before we move on? Yes? The semicolon?
Single.
What's a single colon? From what?
From constructors.
Oh, it's a single colon in constructors. So in a constructor, we defined our constructor like this when we were implementing it, and we had a colon followed by var value, or var2 arg, and so on. And this is how we call the constructor on instance variables. To set default values. So in Java, you just use new in the constructor, but that doesn't quite work because we call the default constructor on all our instance variables if you don't do this. So you'd be too late to actually call the constructor with something other than the default. So this allows you to do that. And this is the syntax we use for initializing the member variables, the instance variables in the class, just before the beginning of the constructor starts. You can also, of course, assign them new values in the constructor. That's perfectly fine. Where this really makes a difference is when you want to call the constructor in a particular way and never have the default constructor be called. Yes?
So if we have a method, and it's not a constructor, but we create something inside the method, and we have a default value, would we use this or not?
The question is, if you have a method and you create something inside, would you use this? No. So when you do something like foo x, this means create a foo x, they're called x with a default value for foo. That's how you do that. And if you don't want the default value, you do like foo x, 100, and this would create an x calling the constructor, which takes an integer 100 as an argument. Other questions? Yes. Which file are prototypes supposed to go in is the question, the .h file. The .h file should contain the things that other files that are just using the class will need. And that includes the prototypes, or using a function will need. Yes?
Will it still work if it's in another file?
This question is, will it still work and if it's in another file? So the rule is that when we use a function or a class, we need to have the prototypes and the declarations available. As long as that always holds true, it's fine. Now, if you have two copies of the implementation for a class, you'll run into a problem, but that's not because you put the prototype in the wrong place. That's because you put the implementation in the wrong place. Yeah?
When declaring a constructor, do you not need to use a new, like in Java?
So we so far have not seen new. So indeed not. We will talk about what new does in C++. It's a little different than how you use it in Java. And it hasn't come up yet. So we've done everything we've done so far without new. Yes. So we will talk about what new does sometime later, but it in fact is not necessary for a very large amount of C++ code. So other questions? Okay. So last time we very briefly started talking about pointers. So pointers are kind of like references in Java. They store memory addresses. They store the location of some object or integer or something like that. And this is more of a raw view of how the machine is working. So our machines contain what we know as memory. And memory really is just an array of values. Each element of the array has an index known as its address. And memory really is an array of 1-byte 8-bit values. Often, we're going to interpret that array of 8-bit values as set as an array of 64-bit values because we want to have our memory contain longs, let's say. And to do that, we're still going to have the same array. We're just going to have some way of saying there's a 64-bit value at address 0, which is constructed from the 1-byte values at address 0 through 7. Later on in the semester, we'll talk about how that works. For now, you can just assume that whatever size value we need, we store it, we say it's at the address where its first byte is, and we'll figure out how to make multiple bytes be interpreted correctly later on. So everything in our programs, almost everything, we'll talk about the exceptions much later, but almost everything has an address in memory. It has to be stored in the memory somewhere, therefore it has an address. And pointers are variables that instead of containing a value themselves, contain the address of some other value. So they are a value, their value is one of these addresses. So if we want a pointer to this value 1239999, we'll have a variable that contains a 0. We want a pointer to this value 5 here, we'll have a variable that contains 10008. And that will be a pointer. And our pointers are going to have a different type in C++, so to distinguish that they contain an address and not just a normal integer. So we have our values in memory. So you just declare your variables normally. The compiler figures out where to put them in memory. So it chooses an address for them. We'll talk later on in the semester about how it makes those sorts of choices. But for now, it's just sufficient to know that when you make variables, the compiler will choose a place in memory to put them. And there are various ways it makes that choice. So in this case, the compiler chose address 10,000 and 10,008, 10,012. So let's start with an example of pointers. So in C++, pointers are declared with this star. So the first thing here is an integer called, a long called an integer. And the second thing is a pointer to a long called pointer to an integer. So this is how we declare a pointer. So the name of the type I will sometimes write as this is a pointer to an integer, which is written as a long star. That's a pointer to a long. And as you might guess, we can construct pointers to other kinds of types in the same way. And any kind of pointer just contains a memory address. Its type lets the compiler know when you try to use that address what type of value you want to get out of it. But internally, it's all the same representation. It's just one of these addresses of a byte in memory. So here we can see this code is assigning a value to a pointer, and it's using this ampersand operator, which I will read as address of. So that operator takes an integer, which is a variable, and returns its address. So in this case, I'm saying that the compiler located an integer at address 10,000. So ampersand an integer will be the address 10,000. And this is assigning that address to the pointer. So after we run this, the pointer will contain the value 10,000, which, because it's a pointer, we know means it's referring to this value 42. Okay. So questions so far? The question is, do pointers always have to be long types? No. We will have pointers to other types. The pointer, however, will always, on our live machines, will always take up the same amount of space as a long. This might be different in other machines, because they always contain an address, and they have to be as big as an address is, regardless of the size of the thing they point to. Yes?
Is long star a type?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, long star is a type. We, in fact, in C++, we have these types which contain funny characters. Unfortunately, this is only the beginning of that. Yeah?
If we set pointer to an integer to a value, like 50, rather than setting it to the address of another value, what would happen? Would we get like a random piece of memory?
So the question is, what happens if you do pointer equals 50? So if you do this, this is a compile error. However, you can do pointer equals something like cast explicitly to long star of 50. In which case, now you've made your pointer point to some random address and you don't know it's there. Maybe it's sensible, maybe it's not. If you try to use the pointer, who knows what happens? Okay, so we have gotten an address and a pointer, and we need our next step, which is to dereference the pointer. And that's done with this asterisk operator. So this is read as dereference. This uses the value at an address. So here, this star pointer to an integer is exactly interchangeable with an integer. It acts like we wrote an integer because that's where pointer to an integer points. So we can, for example, use it to change the value of an integer. So we're telling the compiler, use this, the address here, access the thing at the address, and assign to it. And similarly, we can use the same syntax to access the value and read from it. And you can do everything you can do with the original value using the pointer, using this dereference operator. The reference operator just says, use the value this points to. Yes?
So when you do that, that means that the actual value of an integer is changed down?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, like in this picture, doing this takes the 42, changes it to 43. And doesn't change the pointer itself. So any questions about what I showed here? Yes?
Is there an advantage to using a dereference object as opposed to just calling an integer and changing it?
So is there a reason why I want to use this dereference object rather than calling an integer? Not in this example. However, for example, in your next lab, we're going to have you use pointers, and they're going to be part of a linked list. You're not really going to have an option of getting to the nth node of the linked list without pointers. Just like you'd need to use references in Java to make that work. So they'll serve similar purposes to why you needed references and not just primitive values in Java here in C++. And that's the cases where it'll matter. This toy example, obviously, yes, I could just write to an integer and that would probably be a better idea. Yes?
Is there a reason that the first cout doesn't have a dereference environment?
Yeah, so this is, as it's saying, this cout here will output the address. This one will output the value it points to. And you can do both. Both are legal. Both will produce very different results. And in our machines, it will actually output the address in hexadecimal. This depends on what machine you're on, but it outputs the address, the value of the pointer itself, not the value it points to. You actually need to dereference to get that. Any other questions? Okay. So, as I mentioned before, we can have more than just pointers to longs. We can have pointers to any kind of type. And it's declared with this asterisk. I would note, I'm trying to emphasize here, that white space doesn't matter in C++, so these are all the same. You can choose whatever you like. I will generally write in this first style here, and I will explain why on the next slide. Also, you can have pointers to pointers. This is an example of that. So this is a pointer to a pointer to a rational object. As a real type, that's how you declare that type, and sometimes you will need to do that. So, the reason I use that syntax is that you can declare multiple pointers, and this probably doesn't work the way you guessed. So, this first statement declares two pointers to floats, x and y. The second statement declares a pointer to float z, and this is probably a mistake, which is a float and not a pointer to float. And this is the same if I put the star next to the float and not next to the z, which is a common error people make. So even if you write float star z, it's the same. And that often confuses people. Why can't I assign an address to this value? That's why. Okay. Any questions about declaring pointers? Yes. Are addresses treated as integers? So the question is, are addresses treated as integers? It depends what you consider being treated as an integer. So you can't do something like x equals 50, as I mentioned. That is illegal. You need a cast. So in that sense, no. It turns out that you can do something like x plus 1. It doesn't do probably quite what you guessed. I don't think we'll talk about it much in this class, but it's legal. And it has an actual meaning. I just don't think we'll use it in this class. We talk about it in 3330. And you can do, for similarly, y minus x. So in some senses, they kind of act like integers, but you can't like directly convert between them and integers. If you want to do that, you need to use an actual cast. Yes?
So
question, is a pointer to a float considered type float? No, the type of a pointer to a float is pointer to float. Pointers to every single type are their own types, and each one is different. So like if I have a pointer to float x, and I have like an int star q, I can't do q equals x is an error. And if I have a float star float g, you know, g equals x is also an error. So they're the distinct type. You need to use the dereference or address of operator to get between float and pointer to float and vice versa. Other questions? Okay, so since we have these pointers to other types, what does it look like to use them? So we can use, say, a pointer to a class type. So here, I'm declaring a rational object, and I'm calling the two-argument constructor to create that local variable, a fraction, which is 2/3. I have a pointer here, which I don't initialize, and then I set it to point to that local variable, and I use that pointer to multiply it times itself and assign the result to a fraction. Notice that I needed some parentheses here because the dereference operator does not bind tightly enough unless I do that. The precedence is wrong. The normal precedence would be to you do pointer to a fraction dot times and then dereference the result of that, which would be an error because it's not a pointer. So this will do that. Do this computation. Okay, so any questions on what would happen here? So we have our pointer to a fraction, which points to a fraction, which in this case is stored in 8 bytes, split up in 2 parts. And we can use star pointer to a fraction just as before to access the, in this case, the object, not just a primitive long. Okay, so those are our basic operations with pointers. We had our dereference operator, which I think is straightforward. Star foo is the value pointed to by foo. So that's how one way you can read it. And it just works exactly like it. A thing to note that is sometimes confusing is that its declarations are different. Because the star is part of the type, it's not doing a dereferencing in the declaration. It's just saying the type is a pointer type. Yes, this is confusing. Yes, C++ made the wrong decision here, but this is what we have. So this in particular means that if you see int star pointer equals at foo, this is the same as this. We aren't dereferencing the pointer at any point in this because declaring it is different. Yeah, even though later on star pointer equals bar, is expecting not a pointer to assign, but a value to set the thing that's being pointed to. Yes?
So you could have just done star pointer equals and bar.
So here, where?
Yeah, the second part.
Well, I wouldn't have this side effect here. This does something, but I could have, so here I'm making pointer point to foo, then I'm setting foo to equal to bar. I'm setting foo itself to equal bar, and then I'm making pointer point to bar. So it wouldn't have the same effect to just make it point to bar originally. So I have that side effect of changing foo, yes?
Would we ever do that, like say star pointer equals and bar to store the address of another thing?
So the question is it ever legal to do star pointer equals at bar? And it would be if you had, say, for example, a pointer to pointer. It might be legal to do that.
So you can step up
fast. Yes. So I mentioned briefly that you can have pointers to pointers. So in this case, if you had a pointer to pointer, then yes, you can assign an address to the thing the first pointer is pointing to. And there may come occasions where you need pointers to pointers for various reasons. Yes?
Instead of using the print line, a pointer equals and bar, can we use a pointer equals and star pointer?
Can I pointer equal, so pointer?
Because bar equals to star pointer.
So can we use which line? First of all, this third line?
I mean, like the second part.
Okay, this third line.
Yes.
Can you use
pointer equals and star pointer?
Can I do pointer equals and star pointer? Okay, that's a good question. So what is the effect of pointer equals and star pointer?
Is it just like redundant?
So what this does is star pointer is what does pointer point to? And what pointer points to is the thing we set the pointer to point to, the address we made it contain, which is the address of foo. So this is equivalent to foo. So if we did this, we'd make pointer have the address of foo, not the address of bar. So we copy the value in bar into foo, but it's still foo that the pointer points to.
So in the address of the pointer, there are like two values, foo and bar.
So the address of the pointer, so initially the address of the pointer, so initially the pointer contains the address of foo. And only, and even after we change foo using the pointer, it still contains the address of foo. We didn't change the pointer, we just changed foo. And so if we later on ask the pointer, look at the pointer's address, it's still going to be the address of foo. Even no matter how much we change the value of foo, we can do whatever you want to the value of foo, the pointer is still pointing to foo. And it doesn't matter whether we did it through the pointer or not. So this statement is the same as if we did foo equals bar. Like, it doesn't change the pointer. Yeah.
So by dereferencing, you don't change the pointer, you just change the value that it points to?
Yes. The question is, by dereferencing, we just change the value a pointer points to, not the pointer? Yes. Pointer equal, yes. To change the pointer, you have to do something which modifies the pointer by not without dereferencing it. Which we, the only thing we've seen is setting it equal to something. There are some other things which can do that. So one example would be if you got a pointer to the pointer, you can modify it through that. Another thing is that you can like do arithmetic on it. Not that we'll do that in this class. Okay. Yes.
Say you have a pointer to an int. Later on, can you change that pointer to a pointer to like a float or something?
Question is, if I have a pointer to an int, can I make that be a pointer to a float later on? You can't change the type. The type is always pointer to int. You need to declare a new variable if you want it. You could typecast and make it point to the wrong thing, but that's not recommended because when you dereference it, you're going to get something weird. To a different, what do you mean, different
int? Like, this is a different question, but like, if say I declared a pointer to an int, and then later on want to change where it points to another int, would that be?
Yes, you absolutely can assign pointers to different integers like we're doing here. We're assigning it to foo, then to bar. As long as it's pointing to the right type, it's 100% okay. Okay, so we also mentioned the address of operator. This is also different than the declaration, but we'll talk about that later. What it means in a declaration, but it's completely different in a declaration. So it returns the address of a variable or value. We've only seen it using a variable, but it turns out you can also use this syntax to get the address of an array element or an instance variable in an object. It all works. You can't use it to get the address of a temporary value. So if you like ask for the address of 2+2, that's an error because the compiler is not going to guarantee that that sticks around long enough to have a memory address that doesn't go away. Okay, so we saw this example here. Pointer. So there's one other operator I'm going to talk about, and that's because this is awfully annoying. Like, we have those mandatory parentheses because otherwise we're saying dereference the thing that times returns. And it turns out that very often you'll have a pointer to some kind of object, and you'll want to call a method on the object. It's very, very frequent. And so C++ has a shorthand for this, which is the arrow operator. And it's just a shorthand. So it's exactly, so star foo in parentheses dot bar is exactly the same as foo arrow bar. And this is just to avoid writing annoying parentheses star and end parentheses. Any questions on this? And this, I should point out, since it doesn't come up, that this works for methods and instance variables. It's all the same. anything you use dot for. Okay, so that's our pointer operator. So some other special things about pointers. So one thing is null. There is a null pointer type. And there are two ways of getting it. There's a constant null, which you need to include some header for. Officially, it's in C standard def, but including almost any header, I think pretty much any header will get it for you. So if you include IOStream, generally it's defined. Or you can just write the value number 0. So I told you earlier that if you like try to assign a pointer, an integer to a pointer, that's an error. 0 is a special case, it's an exception. And it's how it's one of the ways of representing the null value, null pointer value, which is like the null value in Java. So it doesn't exist for normal objects, but it exists for pointers. So it's an explicitly invalid value, which you can set a pointer to, and when you try to use it, you're going to get a crash, probably. Maybe not, probably. You can check if things are null by just explicitly asking pointer equals equals null or pointer equals equals zero, or you can use the truth value. So null pointers are false in an if statement. They're treated like a false value, and non-null pointers are treated like a true value in an if statement. So you can also use that. Or you prefer, so this is how you test for a null pointer, which is most often what you want to do. So any questions so far? Yeah.
So can we also use 0 for the SI a null value for the string type?
So the question is, can you do, so what string type are you talking about?
So like if the pointer has a type of a string, can we still use 0 as a null value?
So you mean the type string? I don't think we've talked about this.
Yes.
So the literal type string does not have a null value. You can have an empty string, a string with no characters, but there's no special null value for a C++ string. If you have a pointer to string, yes, that has a null value, but that's not the same thing as a plain string.
But would the pointer to the string have a null value?
The pointer to the string could be null, or it could point to an actual string, yes.
So we could declare string, or let's not do string, we could declare char star pointer.
Yes, so char star, yes, so if you're that's why I asked what type of string you're talking about, because if you're talking about a char star e equals 0, this is perfectly fine, and yes, you can have a pointer to char that points to null. Which, as we'll learn later, can be used to represent strings, because this pointers can also point to arrays, which we'll talk about later. So one note is, I said they hopefully crash. So in Java, you're used to when you use null pointer, that triggers a null pointer exception, and that always makes your program crash. In C++, it's not so guaranteed. Usually it crashes, but it's not required to. And it might not sometimes. This is actually bad. You know, you might think your program crashing less is good. It's not. It's going to make things harder to debug anytime this happens. But usually it crashes. It's pretty reliable. The thing which gets people in more trouble is that uninitialized pointers are not null. Sometimes they're null, but sometimes the compiler just chooses a place in the memory for the pointer, and if you don't initialize it, it just doesn't do anything to that memory location. And some value was there before, and it might not be the value of a null pointer. It might be some other value. Maybe it's even a real memory address. Maybe it's even the memory address of something you care about. And if you try to use it, it will access that memory and maybe change it and maybe cause your program to do something really, really strange. This is something to keep in mind. So if you're worried about this, just make sure you always initialize your pointers. But this is unlike what you're used to in Java, where everything is guaranteed to have a well-defined value. Yes?
Will dash w all cache this?
So the question is, will dash w all cache this? Usually? Usually. The compiler probably can't always tell reliably. Like if you have a bunch of if statements, it might not know is this value used uninitialized or not? So it might not give a warning. Okay, and I mentioned pointers to pointers, and I'll give an example of that. So here is a pointer to pointer. So I mentioned that that was possible. So we have at pointer, so this is a pointer to a pointer. So we have this setup here where we have pointer to pointer points to pointer, pointer points to value one, and we use value one, change value one through the pointer to pointer. And the way the precedence works, this is just equivalent to star pointer to pointer, and you are welcome to write the extra parentheses if that makes you feel happier. So here we change this 42 to 32 by using pointer to pointer to get to the pointer. And we follow, because there's another star, we follow another step to value 1. We see 42. We have to do minus equals 10. So we change 42 to 32 and value 1. And then we use our pointer to pointer one step to change it to point to value 2, which is, so we're taking one level. So we get the pointer. First, we take go one arrow deep. And we change it to point to value 2, which has is address 1004. That's what the ampersand value 2 returns. And then we can use that to edit. Oh, I totally can't do math on this slide. We use that to edit this value. So it makes sense how pointers to pointers work. So it's just it's theoretically something you should know from how normal pointers work. The only thing that's new is that, yes, you can have multiple stars when you're declaring the pointer, and the precedence of star is such that it groups like this. So that works. Yes? So the question is, if you're creating a method to search something and you return a pointer to the value you find, would that be useful? That is a thing you might do. Yes, that is a common thing to use pointers for. So a good example is that you have a linked list, you might return a pointer to the linked list node, like you would return a reference to it in Java. Any questions on this example? And on the subject of pointers possibly being useful, here is an actually useful thing to do with pointers, which is swap. So this is an implementation of a method of a function that swaps two values, in this case rational values, but we could have used any type we wanted. It doesn't matter. And we make a temporary variable, which we copy the value from that one pointer points to and two. We assign to the other, and I forgot an asterisk on the slide. Use the pointer, assign the value one pointer points to the value the other pointer points to, and then, I will correct this slide when I post the actual PDF. For obvious reasons. This is what I get for assuming I know how to write swap in my sleep. I've done this before. But this is an example, but swap is a classic example of something that pointers are useful for. You need to pass pointers because you want to have a function which changes the values you pass it. So what you do in C++, one thing you can do is you can pass pointers to the two values you want changed. And I'm very sorry for not reading this example very carefully. Yes?
It says temp equals star a, and then you're setting star a to temp again.
Okay, so it's the other correction I need to make. So we want, we'll just do, so we want here, so we'll just scribble that out, and it's gonna be, we want to set star B equal to star A, and then we want to set star A equal to B, right? And then we want to set star A equal to B, and then star B equal to temp, like I had written. Okay, so that was the error I made. Sorry about that. So we have A, B, we copy A into temp, then we copy A into, we copy B into A, and then we copy temp into B. Yes? The question is, after this, do A and B both point to the same memory addresses? No, because we're always, in the correct version, we're always dereferencing A and B. We always use star A, star B, so we never change the pointers. Yeah, so they still point to where they started, we just change the values. So this is a common pattern you'll see, is this sort of method prototype here. Is that we'll have a prototype where we take in, where we return, don't return anything, we have a void, a return value, and we take in two pointers. This means that we're probably modifying those two values, and that's what the function is meant to do, that's why it exists. Like conceptually, it might have side effects, but usually when you see a function like this, its purpose is to modify values using the pointers you give it. And this is a common pattern, especially because we can't return two values easily. Yeah?
Is there a reason we couldn't have done this with just rational A and rational B?
Okay, so the question is, what happens if I do the equivalent of swap rational A, comma, rational B, and I don't have pointers. What's going to happen in that case? And I do temp equals A equals B, B equals temp. What's going to happen in that case is the question. And the answer is, we're going to change A and B, which are local variables, to the function. So we're going to change the local variables A and B, which are arguments and local variables to the function, and that's not going to do anything here when we do first.print. It's just not going to change that because we only changed our local variable copies of the values.
So are pointers never used as local variables?
So pointers are local variables. So these A, pointer A and B are local variables here.
But the values at them are.
The values they point to are not. Are variables, are local variables in a different function.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty common case. But the A and B themselves are local variables, so if we change A and B, it's not going to change the address of first, right? Which is good because that's not a value we can actually change. Yes?
On a similar note, could you have passed in rational ampersand A and rational ampersand B as parameters?
Rational ampersand, Oh, could we have done and A and B? Yes, and we'll talk about that later. Talk about what that means later. Yes. Other questions? Okay, so I guess just as a test of understanding, what do you think happens with this code? Okay. Who needs more time? So who thinks it's A? B? C? D? E? F? Good. Okay. So we mostly agree. I think there's enough agreement that I'm not going to spend too much time going over it. You can ask me later. You want an explanation? Okay, so let's talk about some other issues with pointers. So one tempting case for using pointers is something like this. So here I have 2/3, I have a function which returns it, and the way this is going to work is it's going to make an actual copy of 2/3 each time I call this function. Because remember, it's values, not references, so we're actually copying 2/3, we're copying two values, you know, when the function returns. And, you know, that might be okay for rational, but, you know, if we have our huge value type for storing huge values, we might not want to do that. You know, so is there a solution which avoids copying the whole possibly very big value when we return from the function? And one idea you might have is, well, let's just return a pointer to it. Pointers are fixed size, doesn't matter how big the rational or huge value is. And you can do that. This will compile. This will run. It will probably crash or produce some really weird results. Because you have a pointer, you get the address of it, and then your function returns and it no longer exists because the local variable goes away. This is not like in Java, where it's guaranteed if you have a reference to something, it's still around. Here you can have a pointer, you have the address. Yes, it's the address that 2/3 had, but 2/3 no longer exists. So you're just returning the address that will be reused later, probably for something else. So this brings us to our next topic, which we'll go into more next time, which is the new keyword. So in C++, the new keyword says allocate space for this somewhere where it will stick around, called dynamic memory allocation. So here we create a new rational that has space allocated for it somewhere that's going to stay around even when our function is done, and we get a pointer to that space. And that is legal. And this is kind of more like how new works in Java, but most of the time we don't need to do this. When you have just a local variable, we don't need to allocate space somewhere outside what our function is dealing with. We can just use the local variable syntax. So something that's very different than in Java about how new works is like what happens here. When we have our 2/3 pointer, we have this method which gets the 2/3 pointer and prints it. So what happens after this to that 2/3 value we allocated here with new? What happens to that memory? So in Java, the answer would be, well, the Java implementation is going to take care of it, it's going to go away. In C++, that's not what happens. In C++, the memory remains used and allocated, even though there's no way of accessing it unless you can guess the address, which probably you're not going to try to do. This is known as a memory leak. We have memory that is leaked from our program that we can't use. We're just wasting it. You know, so what's happening here is you call show 2/3. After that, the local variable goes away, but the thing allocated with new still in memory. And the solution, which we'll talk about next time, is that there's this call called delete for getting rid of it. So we'll talk more about this next time and other cases for dynamic memory allocation.